This is Dan Klingler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona with Arizona History. On this program, we showcase the people, places, and events that have helped to shape our great state. Today, we'll be talking about a place, Prescott. The first article we'll be reading today is from the Journal of Arizona History, Volume 51, Number 3, and that appeared in autumn 2010. And the article is entitled, George W. Curtis, the City Hall Theater, and the Cultural Life of Territorial Prescott, by Thomas P. Collins. At the time this article was published, Thomas P. Collins was a professor emeritus of theater. He earned his doctorate in theater history from Indiana University in 1972. He currently works as a volunteer with the Charlotte Hall Museum Archives and has authored a book about amateur theater in Territorial Prescott entitled Stage-Struck Settlers in the Sun-Kissed Land, and that was published in Tucson in 2007 by Wheatmark. And again, the article is entitled George W. Curtis, the City Hall Theater, and the Cultural Life of Territorial Prescott. For years, a historical marker has stood in front of a small cottage built by George W. Curtis on McCormick Street in Prescott, Arizona. It offers a brief history of the duplex building, reportedly called Curtis Hall, that once occupied this spot. According to the marker, the hall hosted theatrical performances and the territorial legislature occasionally met there between 1879 and 1885. Overwhelming evidence proves, however, that this so-called Curtis Hall has been confused with another building, the City Hall Theater, a major venue for Prescott's social life from December 1876 to March 1883. Although at least one scholar has noted the error, this is the first attempt to trace the origin and colorful history of City Hall and the role it played in Prescott's social and cultural life for more than half a decade. The City Hall Theater was the brainchild of George Whitfield Curtis, born in 1828 and died in 1885. He was a native of Maine who had married Julia W. Weber in Biddeford on June 12, 1848. Julia gave birth to a daughter, Ora Anna, in 1851, before George ventured alone to the western frontier, settling in San Francisco in April of 1852. He moved to Prescott in June of 1864 during the village's settlement and mining boom. Curtis became a lumberman, purchasing George Lount's half-interest in Yavapai County's first sawmill, which he operated in partnership with Albert O. Noyes until 1873. Curtis and Noyes also operated a profitable 10-stamp quartz mill, but lost money speculating in the mining and milling of gold-bearing ores. Curtis's successful businesses provided him with the capital to purchase lots 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 of Block E on McCormick Street from the village of Prescott on August 24, 1874. Unfortunately, tragedy tempered his success. Julia Curtis died in April 1876, leaving George a widower. 9 months later, on January 30, 1877, he married Anna Conn, an Irish widow. George adopted Anna's three children, Joseph Edward, 17 at the time, Hattie Susan, 15, and Charles George, 13. By 1875, the enterprising George W. Curtis owned a lucrative new sawmill in the Lynx Creek area 2.5 miles south of Prescott, in addition to his lots on McCormick Street. By 1878, he was venturing into the entertainment industry. That March, Tom Fitch, the noted lawyer and silver-tongued orator, had founded a dramatic club composed of members of the Prescott Bar. The thespians were looking for a theater worthy of their lofty aims. Fortunately, a building was available. On November 24, 1876, George Curtis sold lots 16 and 18 of Block E, enclosed by McCormick, Gurley, and Goodwin Streets, for $200 to rancher and entrepreneur Louis Dugas. In early December, Dugas and his partner, Professor George Wentworth, constructed an enormous hall, 40 feet by 80 feet, on one or both of these lots, each of which measured 50 feet wide by 150 feet deep. The building would serve as Prescott's new skating rink. The Weekly Arizona Miner immediately touted the rink as a huge success. The Prescott newspaper paid particular attention to the Christmas ball that featured music by the Fort Whipple Band and a supper catered by Whitehead and Price. 190 ladies and gentlemen enjoyed the bountiful repast. In late December, Wentworth sold his interest in the building to Dugas, who at once announced his intention to rent the hall out for dancing parties, dramatic entertainments, concerts, skating carnivals, and other social events. Although the Miner spoke of Dugas's sole proprietorship, it is clear from subsequent newspaper articles that Dugas and Curtis had already formed a partnership in the building. On July 27, 1877, the Miner reported that the skating rink is being repaired and the stage arranged with curtains, etc., preparatory to being brought into requisition by our local amateur and dramatic associations. In the same issue, we hear that the owner of the skating rink has refitted, rebaptized, and renamed the rink, which will hereafter be known as the City Hall. Dugas threw a festive ball on July 29 at the skating rink, or rather the City Hall, where quite a large number of citizens gathered and enjoyed themselves until midnight, keeping step to the sweet notes from the Hudson Brothers Band. According to the Miner, the City Hall is by far the largest and best adapted for parties in the territory, affording 100 couples ample room to mingle in the festival dance at a time. A notable concert took place at City Hall on August 3, 1877, when Fanny Coutts, wife of Fort Whipple Commander Brigadier General August V. Coutts, and Mrs. N. B. Bowers, the bright particular stars in the brilliant constellation, charmed the audience with their perfect rendering of the several ballads for which they were cast by the management. The 8th Infantry Band, under the direction of Pietro de Bella, provided the accompaniment. Several band members harmonized with de Bella's cornet in the maestro's arrangement of Sweet Spirit, Hear My Prayer, and Private Giuseppe Tomaselli contributed a violin solo. According to the newspaper account, the Irish Brigade's version of The Regular Army O, the title song from an 1875 musical, provided much merriment. Actors also recreated three scenes from Perrault's story of Bluebeard in vivid tableau. Curtis and Dugas set in motion several weeks of repairs and embellishments at City Hall in preparation for a whirlwind of dances in December of 1877 and in the early months of 1878. The Odd Fellows, of which Curtis was a member, organized a lavish grand ball for Christmas Eve, intended, if possible, to surpass anything of the kind ever heretofore given in Prescott. The Miner noted on December 28 that the hall was beginning to resemble Baldwin's Theater in San Francisco. New windows and doors have been put in, and the whole inside of the building linened, sealed, papered, and otherwise beautiful, the newspaper reported. At the same time, some of the leading young gentlemen of the town organized a society whose object was to provide entertainment of a select and enjoyable character for themselves and friends at specified intervals. Dubbing themselves the MOQF, the meaning of the Kabbalistic letters remained secret, they launched the social season with a festive New Year's Eve ball at City Hall, followed by a calico ball on January 18, a masquerade ball celebrating George Washington's birthday on February 22, a picnic social, and a May Day party. On January 15, 1878, Louis Dugas sold his interests in City Hall along with lots 16 and 18 back to George Curtis. Curtis now owned virtually all of Block E. He relished the opportunity to turn his hall into the grandest theater in Yavapai County. The inaugural performance under Curtis's sole management was the quaintly titled Great Concert by Ye Old Folks, a benefit for Ye New Meeting House of Ye Presbyterians, on February 28, 1878. The performers, whose names the Miner withheld in its report of the event, sang solos and quartets. A men's and women's chorus performed the Marseillaise hymn, Old Folks at Home, and Auld Lang Syne. a harpsichord solo and duet rounded out the evening. In April 1878, the Prescott Dramatic Association expressed its interest in occupying the building. In approaching Curtis, Tom Fitch pointed out that, although the building's overall size was right, the ceiling was too low and the stage was too small. Fortunately, with his sawmill producing large quantities of superior lumber daily, Curtis had the means to meet Fitch's demands. On April 3, the miner reported that G.W. Curtis has concluded to take the present stage out of the city hall and put in a new one, extending the entire width of the building, with dressing rooms in the rear. A drop curtain and other stage trappings will also be put in, and the building remodeled into a regular theater. By the time the Dramatic Association shall be ready to bring out Led Astray, it is purported to have these improvements all complete. The same issue announced the leading actors for Led Astray, soon to be presented at the City Hall. What a shock it must have been to Curtis when Tom Fitch and the Prescott Dramatic Society purchased lots on the corner of Liberty and Alarcon Streets, hired architects Campbell and Parker, and proceeded to build a brand new theater. Construction was underway by May 17. That very evening, Fitch delivered at City Hall his controversial lecture, The Other Life, in which he argued that secular and scientific evidence supported, rather than refuted, the written revelations of Scripture. Benjamin Morgan, Fitch's fellow thespian from the newly formed Dramatic Club, entertained the audience with recitations from Shakespeare. Proceeds from the evening went to Prescott's Library Association. Curtis must have felt betrayed. If so, he didn't complain to the newspapers. Prior to City Hall's renovation, Fort Whipple's 12th Infantry Band Variety Troop, under the direction of Private John Stark, had staged an entertainment for the citizens of Prescott. According to the May 17 edition of the Miner, their performance included ballads, clog dancing, a violin solo, and two Ethiopian burlesques entitled The Intelligence Office and the Stranger. Private Stark appeared as the stranger, and Private John H. Foster played Mrs. Holler, the adulterous but repentant wife. The show, a mix of minstrelsy and variety, typified the all-male military acting troops on the frontier. Undaunted by Fitch's plans, Curtis converted the City Hall skating rink on McCormick Street into the City Hall Theater in July and August of 1878. Engaging Charles B. Lovell, a Prescott roofer with previous experience as a scene painter and actor manager in California, and his actress wife Maggie, Curtis clearly intended to provide serious competition for Tom Fitch's new Prescott Theater, which was scheduled to open on August 12th. The Levels would not only perform new plays, but paint the scenery as well. Meanwhile, the Prescott Philharmonic Society, under the direction of Professor A. Neumayer, staged their first grand vocal and instrumental concert at City Hall on June 7, 1878. The performance featured an overture by Fort Whipple's 12th Infantry Band and nine or so selections from William Bradbury's popular cantata, Esther the Beautiful Queen. The soloist and duet singers included Mrs. Frank G. Parker as Esther, Mrs. George D. Kendall, Mrs. Saul Lewis, Letty Hoyt, Governor John P. Hoyt's wife, John Lloyd, E.S. Seed, and W.E. Joyner. Professor Neumayer played a piece for organ and orchestra, and Mrs. Lewis sang a solo from Plotow's Martha. A.T. McMillan favored the audience with a violin selection from Verdi's Il Trovatore. Called back to the stage, he played The Last Rose of Summer so sweetly, in one observer's estimation, that it was difficult to quiet the audience without hearing more from him, but he declined to come again, notwithstanding the long-continued encore. The grand finale consisted of the gypsy scene and famous anvil chorus from Il Trovatore. Lectures by C.B. Rush, Esquire, Whence, Why, Whither, about the truth of man's origin in God and his destined eternal existence in the world of spirits, and by George B. Platt, The Frauds of the Senator Mill and the Mining Company, followed on June 20 and June 24, respectively, and Curtis provided his hall for the evening party that capped off a long day of July 4 celebrations. In July of 1878, Curtis informed the miner that he intended to put carpenters at work immediately and raise the roof of the city hall. He also planned to enlarge the stage, install scenery, and rearrange the entire structure so that theatrical companies would have but little trouble in placing on the boards and performing any act, from that of the simplest comedy to that of the most difficult tragedy. In fact, Curtis beat Fitch to the punch by opening the new City Hall Theater on August 10, just 2 days before the Prescott Theater's premiere. Charles Lovell rushed his assistants to get the new theater completed in time to trump Fitch's opening. "Four scenes are nearly completed, representing a kitchen, forest, Gothic chamber, and a street," the Weekly Arizona Miner reported on August 7. "Two good-sized dressing rooms, one on either side of the stage, are nearly finished. Rehearsals are being held nightly, and a performance is announced for next Saturday." Curtis was primed for a triumphant opening. Lovell staged a trio of inaugural productions, including J.P. Wooler's two-act serio-comic drama Old Phil's Birthday, presented by a company of Prescott's talented amateurs, followed by two scenes from Richard III, acted by Lovell's young sons Colby and Rolf. The finale featured the hilarious operatic burlesque Bombast's Furioso. The Lovell family swelled their little troupe with local talent. Curtis engaged the Fort Whipple Band to accompany the singers, and the miner responded with a rave review, praising Charles Lovell's professional performance and declaring Maggie Lovell a star. After bestowing generous words on the amateur supporting talent, the reviewer noted that, "The hall is finished in a beautiful style, and a prettier stage or better scenery would be hard to find anywhere." Curtis was off to a grand start. In the face of competition from the Prescott Theater, the Lovells presented two more productions, Gerald's three-act nautical drama Black-Eyed Susan or All in the Downs, starring Maggie Lovell in the title role, followed by Morton's one-act farce Box and Cox on August 28, and Amherst's drama Ireland as It Was, starring Mrs. Paul Ricker as Judy O'Trott, and Lovell's business partner, H.B. Crouch, as Ragged Pat. Lovell family members played supporting roles, and Mr. Merritt contributed harmonica solos at the September 23 performance. Large audiences and enthusiastic reviews might have prompted more productions. Instead, the Lovell family embarked on a professional tour of Arizona, leaving Curtis high and dry. After their departure, the local newspapers mentioned no further performances at the expensive City Hall Theater. Curtis had lost the battle with Fitch for supremacy. Even professional touring groups, such as the Pauline Markham Company, 1879 and 1880, and the Nellie Boyd Theatrical Troupe from 1880 and 1881, chose the Prescott Theater over City Hall. Curtis subsequently lost an election for mayor of Prescott to Morris Goldwater in January of 1879, shortly after announcing his candidacy the previous month. He had suffered two terrible disappointments, but he did not abandon his splendid hall. After prodding by editor Charles W. Beach in the Miner, in May of 1879, Curtis built, at his own expense, a substantial footbridge across Granite Creek, directly opposite City Hall, for easy access to the building. At the same time, he remodeled the hall to serve as a venue for the Territorial Assembly. It seems likely that the 10th Legislative Assembly conducted its business there in early 1879. We know for certain that the 11th Territorial Legislature met at City Hall in January and February of 1881. We learn that arrangements have been made by Secretary John Gosper, and that the legislature will not meet in the Howey Building, as we were informed and so stated some time ago, the Arizona Democrat announced on December 17, 1880, adding that, "Today we learn that the City Hall has been secured for that purpose, and the 11th Legislative Assembly will meet in the structure. It is the intention to build a partition across the center of the hall, thus providing accommodations for the council and the house." By the time the 12th legislature assembled there on January 8, 1883, Curtis's son Joe and other mechanics had repapered the walls of the House and Council rooms and added a new committee room on the north side of the building. They also carpeted the aisles of both houses to deaden sound and installed stoves and lamps. The legislature, however, met for only a few months out of each year. Curtis could not afford to allow his building to sit unused when the lawmakers were not in session. In June of 1882, he leased out the building to the Prescott Rifles as a venue for their drills. Curiously, that same month, a one-sentence news item in the Prescott Courier announced that the West Prescott Opera House would soon be dedicated. Was this a new entrepreneurial project? Perhaps an elegant name for the theater D.C. Thorne was building at the rear of his cabinet saloon? Or was Curtis hoping to revive his own theater? Whatever his intentions may have been, politics seemed to have prevailed. The newspapers made no further mention of this mysterious opera house, as the Democrats held a love feast at City Hall on the evening of July 14 in preparation for the following day's primary elections. The 12th Infantry Band held a grand promenade concert at City Hall on August 29, and the Democratic Party mounted a rally there in October, a significant development in the realm of territorial politics. A startling news item in the Courier of May 26, 1883, announced that City Hall, West Prescott is being pulled down. It was an abrupt ending for a building that had been playing a vital role in the town's social, cultural, and political life. It seemed odd and became the source of much subsequent confusion. Therefore, when Charles Beach suggested in the March 17, 1885 issue of the Miner that the City Hall should be fixed up for theatrical entertainments, after all, hadn't the building been torn down 2 years earlier? In fact, Beach was referring to the new City Hall, whose cornerstone had been laid in the Capitol block on Gurley and Marina Streets, east of the plaza, in July of 1884. The Knights of Pythias threw a grand dedication ball for the magnificent new two-story brick structure on November 26, with Fort Whipple's 3rd Cavalry Band providing the music. Beach's recommendation for renovation several months later was ignored, probably because Prescott's entertainment needs were already being met. An intimate little opera house had opened on the second floor of Howie's Hall, just southeast of the plaza, while the cabinet hosted minstrel shows. The 13th Legislative Assembly met at the new City Hall in January of 1885. "We visited City Hall yesterday and found Secretary Hiram Van Arman and his assistants busily engaged setting the houses in order," the Courier informed its readers on January 9. Matting, instead of carpets, covered the floors. The furniture was in place. The house will, we fear, be rather crowded inside the railing. George Curtis's City Hall had served many purposes during its 8 years of existence. Roller skating rink, dance hall, banquet hall, concert hall, lecture hall, theater, and legislative meeting place. Owing to ambiguous deeds of sale and scanty building records, its exact construction and destruction dates remain uncertain. But in its time, it was the very heart of Prescott's social and political life. It could accommodate at least 100 dancing couples and probably up to 400 seats for performances. The stage, after remodeling, was probably 38 feet wide by 20 feet deep. It seems highly unlikely that the little duplex designated today as Curtis Hall could have accommodated such a large stage and auditorium, and the newspapers at the time did not mention Curtis Hall as the venue for the events described here. While a number of legislators could indeed have met in the two halves of the Curtis duplex, it is more likely that the building was residential. It may in fact have been erected after City Hall was demolished. George Curtis barely survived the demolition of his building. In 1884, he made an ill-fated investment in the Kimball Mine and subsequently suffered severe financial losses. According to the Courier, this reversal in fortune either brought on or intensified a severe attack of pneumonia from which he never fully recovered. His lungs finally failed him, and he died in November of 1885. Curtis, The mastermind of the Old City Hall project was one of Prescott's most civic-minded pioneers. An obituary in the November 13, 1885 Journal Miner sang his praises. During his residence here, he has served as chairman of the Board of Supervisors and filled other places of trust, the newspaper recalled. He was a good citizen, ever foremost in aiding and assisting in any project calculated to advance the public welfare. He was for many years an odd fellow and helped build up Prescott Lodge No. 1 in its early days. As a Mason, he stood high in the estimation of his brethren. He was initiated in the Aztlan Lodge No. 177 in 1865 and has filled every place and station in the lodge, serving as worshipful master 5 or 6 terms. At the institution of Prescott Chapter No. 2, R.A.M., he was elected high priest, and in 1883, he was elected junior grand warden of the Grand Lodge of Arizona. Ironically, the obituaries failed to mention his most ambitious enterprise, the City Hall Theater. And that's the conclusion of George W. Curtis, The City Hall Theater, and Cultural Life of Territorial Prescott, by Thomas P. Collins. Thank you for joining us for Arizona History. This has been Dan Klinger, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org, left click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then, under Programming Links, left click on Demand Podcasts. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device as well.